This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. All right, good afternoon. Welcome to the pod staff. With us today, we have Miss Meredith Elliott Powell. So she is a Hall of Fame speaker, sales guru, business strategist, and market uncertainty expert. So Meredith, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. I am really looking forward to this conversation.
Awesome. So we're going to do things a little bit differently today and pivot to more of a question and answer forum for sales. So obviously, you know, Meredith is an expert in the sales realm. I personally have listened to quite a few of her Sales Logic podcasts and learned a few things and heard about some deals gone good and gone south. So if you're good with it, Meredith, I'll get started with the questions.
Sounds good.
All right. First question. What traditional sales advice that worked for decades is now completely dead or maybe close to being dead and doesn't really pertain to sales anymore?
Yeah. So there's a lot. But I would say that the biggest, probably the biggest, you know, traditional advice that we took is that sales can be a lone wolf. They can function all by themselves. Sales used to not work very closely with marketing. In fact, marketing would be on one side of a company and sales would be on the other. Sales did not work very closely with operations. And that was fine in the day when you had one or two competitors and the customer experience or brand awareness was not as important as it is today. But right now, sales, operations, and marketing are really one entity. In fact, I think that sales begins with marketing, and the best and most successful sales professionals are working very, very closely with both of those departments.
Yeah, great answer. Yeah, do you think that's why the sales and marketing teams in some companies can clash if that's not clearly defined?
Yeah, I think they do clash if it's not clearly defined. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that they clash in the sense that, you know, a lot of times marketing is not as held accountable for the numbers as sales is held accountable for the numbers. A lot of times marketing and operations don't realize how vital the information coming. The only people really talking to customers are salespeople. So the intel coming from salespeople is critical for marketing and operations to shape the customer experience. So I do think it's a reason that there's friction there, but the smart companies are finding the ways to integrate them because no salesperson is out there making a traditional cold call anymore. Your reputation really, my partner Mark Hunter says this all the time, your reputation arrives before you do. And if I sell a customer and operation screws it up at all, I've lost that customer for life. And so we've got to work together very closely as a team. It used to not matter that much. It matters so much more now.
Yeah. So do you think cold calling is dead?
Absolutely not. I don't think cold calling is dead, but I think cold calling without warming the group up with your, with information. Like when you think about it, if my phone rang right now, I wouldn't pick it up. One, because I'm talking to you, but the other is I'm really busy. But if my phone rang and it was somebody that I'd never met, but I recognized their posts from LinkedIn or something, I might recognize that because they already have value to me. So cold calling is not dead at all. I cold call all the time, but I'm constantly putting information out there to build my brand awareness and my expertise in the marketplace.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. Next question. When a buyer raises a price objection, what is the actual unsaid business barrier they're usually signaling?
Yeah, number one, there's not enough value. It is a myth that people are price sensitive, complete myth. they will default to price if they think price is all that you're offering. But I think it is very much that you haven't given me a reason to pay you that amount of money. Like, or you haven't given me a reason that this should be the most urgent thing on my list. You haven't given me a reason as to why I need to act now. If you've chosen the right prospect, you're functioning in the right target market, backed by you have sold value, the risk that people would take if they didn't do business with you and the value they'll gain, price goes off the table.
Yeah, the best salespeople I've known have been the ones that price is kind of just the casual last conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to, you know, first of all, you have to identify my pain and then you have to solve my pain, and I will pay you a lot of money to make my pain go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. What is your specific framework for converting a definitive no into a constructive discovery conversation?
Yeah. So I think, you know, really my first framework is when people say, you know, I just got one where somebody turned me down for a speaking engagement, you know, definitive no, we made another selection. I shot a quick video just on a Vidyard that would go right in the email. And I said, you know, thank you so much. I really appreciate you considering me. I'd love it if you'd have an opportunity next couple of weeks. I'm not in any urgent need, but I'd love to know what it is that you're looking for and why I lost the deal. So to me, I go really, and they responded immediately and said she'd jump on a call with me. There's two reasons for that. I use video a lot because in video, I can get my personality and my energy across. And I think salespeople miss that a lot. The second is people will genuinely, if you ask for help, they will help you. And so I wasn't begging for another shot. I wasn't begging, you know, whatever. The other tactic that I use that is really strong is what I call the 11th hour letter. And I'd reach out and I'd say, Michael, thanks so much. You've made a great decision. So-and-so is an excellent choice. You'll have a fantastic event. Please know if you're ever not happy, if you ever have any questions, you need anything, please know I'm here and to reach back out. So I make it easy to come back to me and easy, you know, if you've already rejected me, to not be embarrassed to have to come back and do business with me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people struggle with dropping the pride in order to do so. And they'd rather be like, not really burn the bridge, but essentially so, because they're not going to, if they sense that negativity from you, it's really easy for people to just say, oh, well, I don't want to do business with that kind of person anyways, and then just move.
It is. So I always too, you know, maybe this is part of my process as well, but I always assume you just meant no right now. Like I always assume, I'm like, oh, I didn't create enough value. I didn't give you enough reason to choose me. I didn't make my case. Thank you so much for the intel. Now I got to go back and do some more work and I'll come back at you again. So I always just assume we're on a journey, right? And my journey is to get to yes.
Yeah, that's good advice. What is the single most powerful open-ended question a sales professional can ask during an initial discovery call?
I think the single most powerful open-ended question they can ask is something that they have done based around the industry. So they've done the research in the industry, and asking an open-ended question about how that challenge is impacting that company specifically. You know, so I'll give you an example. I was just working with a packaging company and I was calling and I'm trying to do their sales kickoff for the next year. Well, I know that the supply chain issue with the strait being closed is impacting them pretty seriously because it's impacting everybody in the packaging industry. And so I asked the question, I said, tell me about the fact that, you know, now you're really limited on the amount of supply you're getting through. So I imagine you're having to choose which customers you'll give to supply to and which customers you won't. How is that impacting your goals for the year, how you're assigning things to salespeople? You know, just give me the overall scope of how that particular challenge is impacting you. Why is that powerful? Is number one, it shows I really know this industry, right? Like I've really done my research. That is not a question they're getting asked. The other is I'm getting to probably the most significant pain point they've got. And if I can get to the most significant pain point they've got, I can get the deal.
What would you say in response to that to a sales leader that preaches to their team, quantity is key, and don't waste your time doing too much market research for one prospect before you even contact them?
Yeah, let me just apologize to every single sales leader who is listening to this. What salespeople need to do is realize that the only thing a sales leader cares about is you hitting the number. And if I had ever done what most of my sales leaders had told me to do, I can count on one hand the number of really good sales leaders I've had. And I've had some really, really good ones that I took all of their advice. But you're a good salesperson. And you know what it takes to hit that number. And if doing research helps you hit that number, do the research. Now, if you're wasting a ton of time doing research and you're not hitting your number, go back and listen to your sales leader. But probably the best piece of advice I ever have for salespeople is all that anybody cares about anytime is do you hit your number or do you exceed your number? And if you do your number and you exceed your number, nobody cares how you did it. And if somebody says, don't do a lot of research and you're losing deals, then you better go back and do research despite the advice. And believe me, people will forgive you anything for hitting your number.
Yeah, I've noticed that in my career as well. Just when you hit the numbers,
Nobody
it's not,
cares.
I'm not saying it's a free for all, do whatever you want, but to some extent, it
It
sort
is.
of is because there's been times when I've exceeded numbers or whatever, and I did it unconventionally, and they were like, "What did you do, actually? Sorry, we didn't tell you to do that, but what did you do?" So I always thought that that. Whenever that first happened to me, I thought that that was awesome. And I think I had really good leaders around me that weren't as prideful as some other leaders that you hear about because they were able to say, huh, this guy is 23 or what, however old I was. And he actually just taught us something. So, like that willingness to learn and implement as a sales leader is, in my experience, not overly common. But when people are like that, you really, really notice it.
You do. And you know, the thing is that first of all, performance is power. It's power all the way to the executive level. I mean, if you perform and you consistently perform, you carry a lot of weight. The other is I've been a sales leader and I've told people around me to do things. And sometimes my advice was really bad. And I'm really glad that people didn't do it. And you know, the thing about going into leadership is you're not in front of the customer as much. And being in front of the customer, having your ear to the ground, you know how to sell. Follow your gut instincts. Pay attention to that. If you're not hitting your numbers, do what you're told. If you're hitting your numbers, share how you're hitting your numbers, but follow your own gut advice because that's what matters at the end of the day.
What would you say to that new or newer sales leader that is certainly qualified to now go from an individual contributor to a leader, or maybe both, maybe a combo role,
Sure.
but they do kind of feel that the thrill is gone, and they're adjusting to that, what kind of what you just said, where the sales reps that they are overseeing and leading. They are more well connected with the customer and the market, and they feel that they're losing touch.
Yeah, I would say this, and I get that because I had that same experience too, but I think one of the things you've got to do is shift your mindset, is that you have to understand what your job is now. As an individual performer, your job was to hit a number, and you're valuable to a company when you can hit a number. But you're not nearly as valuable as you are when you move into a sales leader role and you can produce four or five people as good as or better than you. If you can master replicating yourself or even producing people that are better than you are so invaluable to a company, it isn't even funny. So the biggest, you know, Michael, the biggest switch that I see is that sales leaders have to change their mindset. It is no longer about the number. It is about developing people who can exceed the number and getting multiple versions of you. And I think when you flip that around, you get that high again, because it's like being, you think of it in the mindset of being a parent. I mean, like, I think about like my husband taking the kids fly fishing. My husband loves to fly fish, huge fly fisherman. Nothing is more exciting to him than watching kids catch a fish. He absolutely is the biggest high he gets, far bigger than a fish he's ever caught, because his mindset's different. He wants them to have that experience. And so as a sales leader, you have to have that. You have to shift your mindset to the fact that this is my high now. And and if you can get there, it is such a better high than landing a big deal. Because watching other people excel, building a team around you of people who are better than you are, that's the ultimate.
Yeah, it's almost like shifting into a more selfless mindset, but in turn, you're really helping yourself. It's kind of like the concept when people say, yeah, when you volunteer, when you give back,
yes,
it actually comes back tenfold, but not really if you set out to do that only to get it back, you know?
Exactly. And so sometimes, though, it leads to such a great thought, though. If you don't get a high off of that, maybe you should go back to an individual contributor role. And there's nothing wrong with that. I used to work with a guy who was in a sales leader role, and all he wanted to do was be in front of the customer. That is what he loved. And he ultimately went back to an individual contributor role. It was a better fit for him.
Yeah. And would you say, whenever you say like investing in your team, I've been around leaders who invest in like know everything about my personal life, or at least, you know, to a good extent, and try to develop me as a person. And I have had leaders that say, I will develop you as much as I can in a work-related sense so that you can hit your numbers. And I've been a sales leader before, and I was kind of more leaning towards the former, but I think maybe a combo of both is a really good leader.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also think you have to take your lead from the individual. Like some people want to get to know you at a personal level and a professional level. And some of the people that work for you don't. You know, they don't want to involve you, at least not right at the beginning. And so I think the greatest quality a sales leader can have is listening, is really listening and paying attention and being able to adjust your style to develop people how they want to be developed. Because I think if you listen first, you build connection and you build trust. And if you build connection and you build trust, people will let you in at all different types of levels.
Yeah, absolutely. What beyond standard KPIs like sales or call volume, or you know, those kind of volume metrics, and closed won deals, obviously, what's the maybe like the under the radar truest predictor of long-term sales success?
Yeah, it's actions.
Not tangible.
Yeah. You know, so well, let me see if I answered this correctly. So first of all, I never worry about the KPIs. I figure they're going to take care of themselves. What I've always been interested in myself and my sales teams is the number of actions and sales behaviors that we're doing on a regular basis. Like instead of measuring closed deals or contracts won or contracts lost, I'm far more interested in, you know, the quality of your prospect list. Are the people that are on grading your prospect list is probably one of the most important things that you do. Like I have 9 qualifiers for a prospect. And in the very first call, I'm trying to figure out if they don't fit 6 of the 9, I don't call on that prospect again. And so I think the biggest indicator is, are you selling from a place of power rather than a place of need? In the sense that, are you overfilling that pipeline with highly qualified leads so that you aren't chasing business that is never going to close? Or if you do close it, you're going to have to discount the price, or you end up closing it and this customer is more of a pain in the backside than they were from ever. And I think probably the biggest indicator, here's how I'll answer the question, is the biggest indicator is salespeople who sell from a place of need continue to struggle, and salespeople who sell from a place of power continue to succeed. Meaning, I was playing golf in Salt Lake City, Utah. It was a Wednesday afternoon. I'd finished a speaking engagement. My husband was with me. We went out to play golf and we get paired up with these two young guys, and they can't be 27, 28 years old. I said, "What are you guys doing out here on a Wednesday afternoon playing golf?" I said, "I've got an excuse. I just finished up a speaking engagement." They said, "We hit our quota on Monday, so we could take the rest of the month off." Biggest indicator those boys are not going to be successful.
Yeah, as a 27-year-old, I can say that that's probably not
Well, listen, as somebody who's a lot older than 27, I can tell you people are still doing it at my age. But the thing is that really successful people never take their foot off the gas.
Now, I have like whenever I was leading a team, I would like to like take people out for maybe a golf outing or something like
Sure.
that. And I think that that's a lot of times like that little expense, relatively, it's a very small expense. And I think that a lot of leaders should do more of that, or
I
say
agree.
like, hey, you did crush your quota. So Friday from noon to four, why don't you go to the golf course, or I'll go with you, or something like that. And I think that balance is good, but people either think it's too expensive, or they think that my team's going to take advantage, or a number of things as reasons to not reward your team, you know?
No, in fact, rewarding your team. My husband is a dentist, and we put in this bonus system that whenever we would hit break even for the week, like whenever we would hit the point where all the expenses had been paid, they would get a percentage of anything we made over break even. And you want to talk about watching people work incredibly hard. And so absolutely, I mean, the thing is that you can pay for a golf outing if everybody on your team has hit your quota because you just made a lot of money, right? And a golf outing is 250 bucks, best 250 bucks you've ever spent, because they're going to work their tail off next month to hit their quota because they want to go play golf again. It's huge return on investment from it.
What specific routine or boundary maybe keeps a top performer from burning out?
I think it's a little bit of what you just said. I think what keeps a top performer from burning out is that they're never in desperation mode. Like, you remember when we were all in college and you were probably a good student, I was not. And I was famous for pulling all-nighters, like not going to class and then deciding in the last 2 weeks of class that I could cram for the final exam. Big joke. That does not work, right? By doing a little bit every day. If I'd just gone to class all semester, done the little bits of homework, I'd be ready for the final exam. It's the same thing with sales. I'm pretty famous for making 3 to 5 calls every single day of my life. Doesn't sound like a lot of sales calls. But the thing about it, if you think about the fact that I make 3 to 5 sales calls 365 days a year, and I've been doing it since 2004, that's a lot of sales calls, right? So I think consistency is the key to top performers from burning out.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's really with anything too. Like I even think
Yes.
about like working out.
Oh,
Like
completely.
exercise to me is like if I haven't worked out in 3 days, you probably don't want to be around me. I'm probably pretty grumpy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are, scared to do stuff like that, or maybe they don't want to start or whatever. And it's that same concept for like from sales to everything else in life. It's like the consistency. If you work out 2 days a week for the rest of your life, you're going to be much healthier than the person that worked out 6 days a week for 10 years and then completely stopped.
Yeah, it's a compounding effect. So I've got a rule. I'm ridiculously disciplined, and I was not most of my life. Discipline is a skill you can learn. But I exercise for 30 minutes before 10 a.m. And the reason I do it before 10 a.m. is because if I exercise for 30 minutes before 10 a.m., I will exercise another 30 minutes somewhere in the day. Because 30 minutes is hard to make an excuse that you can't grab 30 minutes, right? But an hour, if I wait until the end of the day, I'm like, oh, well, I kind of don't have an hour. So just by doing that, and it's the consistency of it, absolutely.
Unrelated to sales on the workout subject, I definitely like I cannot stand when people, because I used to do this, so I know it's not true. When people say,
Life just has gotten in the way. I can't find the time to work out. It's like you can find the time to do anything that your heart desires.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yep, you always find the time.
Right. What's the most common well-intentioned mistake that intermediate or new salespeople make that quietly stalls or overall just kills their deals?
It's a con it's it is they do it's the same thing, but they do it two different ways. And it's follow-up. It's either a complete lack of follow-up. No, they don't. They call on somebody three times and expect they're not interested, or they inundate them with so much follow-up. Like, you and I had a great conversation, we're ready to seal the deal. You kind of go dark on me, and I just start reaching out and going, Michael, are you ready? I just had one the other day that something I told this guy I was going to buy this product, and then everything just got crazy. My schedule just got really busy with work. I had some personal things going on, and I didn't answer his email. I knew it was there, and I knew we needed to talk. He kept emailing me, and emailing me, and then he emailed me in kind of an angry way, like he was mad that I wasn't responding to him, and I just thought, we are still in the dating phase, and you just told me that you're a jerk. And I just emailed him back. I said, here's everything that's been going on with me, but thank you for these emails because you've told me this would not be a good relationship with me. And so for me, so I'm moving on to buy the product from someplace else. So it is this lack of follow-up, or incorrectly, like not understanding the art of follow-up. I think we lose more deals because we don't follow up, and we lose more deals because we pressure follow-up.
Believe that I did see that on one of your posts. I watched your video, and it was actually helpful to hear. I mean, this is very helpful, I think, for myself and a lot of listeners that, maybe people have done sales one way for a long time and they are seasoned salespeople. A new perspective and hearing something like that of a guy who's probably a seasoned salesperson ruining a deal because of a simple mistake. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you've got to realize that. I think salespeople do not realize one of the biggest shifts is that in today's marketplace, consumers control the buying cycle. I do not need you to buy a product. I can buy it from other people. I can even buy it without you. So you're nurturing that relationship along. And when people don't get back to you, it's not because they don't want to buy. It is because they're busy, really busy, and you're not on their urgent list right now.
Yeah. And as a salesperson, you're glued to your CRM and your calendar. So that's your life.
Yes.
You're just a small little speck in their life. And I like the term, everyone wants to buy, but no one wants to be sold. And I
Yes.
think that's where the relationship piece comes in, like you were just mentioning.
I agree.
All right. You talk about a lot of your kind of expertise is in like leading in uncertainty and business strategy and stuff like that. So, in a world full of uncertainty, is uncertainty an obstacle or an opportunity and why?
Yeah, it is definitely an opportunity. Most people view it as an obstacle, but and it's for that reason that it's an opportunity. Opportunity, in my opinion, the definition of opportunity is, what can you take advantage of that is holding your competitors back? And when most people are faced with an obstacle, and uncertainty is definitely an obstacle, they stall, they slow down, they don't make a decision. If you can learn to leverage uncertainty, you create the opportunity simply by having a mindset shift around uncertainty. If you can see it as an opportunity for growth, if you can see it as an opportunity that your clients actually need you more when the marketplace is uncertain, you have gained competitive advantage.
That's a good for me to hear in the current state of things, being an entrepreneur and trying to sell myself and my new product and everything like that, because there is certainly
A
a lot
lot
of
of it.
uncertainty. So,
Yes.
awesome. Last question to piggyback off of that. What like ultra bold steps should people take despite that uncertainty?
Yeah. Really good question. Ultra bold steps that people should be taking to take advantage of uncertainty. Number one is to lean into the marketplace. I really want people to understand that the best time to sell is when the marketplace is being disrupted. And the reason for that is because customers need you more when the marketplace is uncertain and your competitors will pull back. So you should be increasing the amount of selling you're doing, not decreasing the amount of selling that you're doing. You also need to take the bold action to really move into the role of advisor and advocate and being ready to talk with prospects and customers about solutions to their biggest challenges and their biggest obstacles. I also think the last that I would say is you need to position yourself as the expert in the field that you sell into solving those challenges that your customers are facing. You've got to be so much more than a salesperson right now. You've got to be a resource, you've got to be an advocate, and you've got to be the chief problem solver for your customers.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to share as final advice to your sales gurus, your salespeople, your entry level, whatever it may be?
Yeah, I would say that everybody's focused on AI and technology right now, and AI and technology are very, very important. They're going to make us more efficient, more effective as sales professionals. But at the end of the day, sales is a relationship business. It's always a relationship business. And I think the most important thing that people can be doing on a regular basis, if you want to exceed in sales, is building your network, is really building relationships and connections, and going back to the art of doing that. It's a lost art in today's marketplace, and the increased value of that is going to be exponential.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Meredith. Thank you for coming on. And I'm sure this is going to be a great episode for our salespeople. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation, and always remember, you can turn uncertainty into your greatest competitive advantage.
Awesome. Thank you, Meredith.
Thank you.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.